Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, if you received your stimulus check in the form of a debit card, you might have wondered if it was legitimate. And on the show today, we'll talk about why different forms of payment are being used. Back with us from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Division of Trade and Consumer Protection are Michelle Reinen, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor. Michelle, good to have you back.
Well, thanks, Larry. It's great to be back.
Also with us, Laura Sutherland, the Administrator for the Department. Laura, always good to see you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Larry. Nice to see you.
So we'll also talk with these experts about the top scams from the last month, how to protect yourself from romance scams, and what you should know about healthcare apps. And we'll take your consumer protection questions as well. So do you have a consumer complaint? You think you may have been a target of a scam? Love to hear from you. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Again, we'd love to hear from you. And let's start with that second stimulus payment. Was issued at the end of December, but some were issued as direct deposits, some as checks, and some as debit cards. And some people are wondering why the heck it was done that way. But a comment from somebody. Go ahead, Laura.
Yeah, so the Bureau's Consumer Protection Hotline has been receiving a lot of calls about consumers questioning if this debit card that they received in the mail is legitimate or a scam. So first of all, we appreciate that people are paying attention. That's good to hear. But yes, so here's some details that consumers need to know about these economic income impact payments. If you're eligible to get that second stimulus check, in most cases, it will be automatically directly deposited into your account. If you did not receive one by early January, you may have gotten either a paper check or a debit card. The form of payment for the second economic impact payment may be different from the form of payment you got for the first stimulus check. So they may have changed. Where can you find out information about the second stimulus check? You can go to the IRS EIP webpage. There's a lot of great information there. And you can check on the status of your payment if you haven't gotten that stimulus check yet and you think you're eligible. The form of the second stimulus check may be different. And if you get a debit card, it's going to come in a white envelope. The return address of that will be Money Network Cardholder Services, and the envelope will have a U.S. Department of Treasury seal on it. So those are some ways you know it's legitimate. The card itself will have a Visa name on the front, and the issuing bank is MetaBank NA on the back, and that's located in Omaha, Nebraska. So if all of this is too much information, we have FAQs. We have frequently asked questions on our website. You can go there. And for more information about how to use your card, you can go to eipcard.com. And finally, if you do one of those things where you think it's a scam and you cut it up and you get destroy it, and then you're concerned that maybe it's legitimate, you can get a replacement card by calling 1-800-240-8100. But again, Larry, all this is on our website. We've got frequently answered questions there, and you can get that information there.
Somebody else was wondering about the check that went out or the card that went out in March or April, whenever that first one went out. If they threw it away or didn't get one, do they go back to that same eipcard.com?
Yes, or call this number 1-800-240-8100 and ask to see if you can get a replacement even for that first one.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Jean in Wausau has a question, so maybe we should go there. Jean, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, we had a fraudulent charge show up on our bank statement against a debit card, and we had not used the card since for quite a while, and we never used it online anywhere. We filed a fraudulent claim with the institution, and we have gotten new debit cards. Should we be doing anything else to protect ourselves?
Michelle?
I think, Jean, what you've done is fabulous. Monitor that card, even though you've gotten a new one. Just monitor the statement to be sure that there isn't anything else. If the bank has canceled that other card, you should be pretty good. But then the other thing you can do just to see and monitor is check your credit report. Everyone's entitled to a free credit report from each of the three credit reporting agencies once a year. And we encourage people to check one of them every 4 months. So you're doing year-round monitoring. But that will let you know if you know you're secure as it relates to identity theft, because depending upon how someone accessed that debit card, they may have other information and could be trying to take cards out in your name. And I don't mean to scare you or anything, but it's just always good to be monitoring for identity theft, and you're not sure how they access that information. So that's a way to check into it. And we have the resources to how to go about doing that credit monitoring, check your annual credit report on our webpage. And so you can go to datcp.wi.gov to read all about it.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Jean, for calling. You've got a list or made a list of your top scam reports from the last month. And I'm just wondering what was number one on the scam list.
So number one was We Energy's a utility scam, an oldie but a goodie, unfortunately, or not a goodie actually, Larry. They don't seem to go away. So use caution if you receive a call or a text that your utilities are going to be disconnected if you do not make immediate payments. Or even if they ask you for your credit card or your bank account information to process a refund. These are most likely scams. The utilities are not calling to threaten you with disconnection or asking you to pay for back payment. So hang up and call your provider directly if you have any concerns about needing to pay. But certainly don't take these unsolicited calls. We're getting a lot of reports, as you see, from these scams.
And just kind of related to that, Lyman in McFarland is on the phone. Let's just go there. Lyman, thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm calling about robocalls or scam calls that are coming from 608, you know, the area code here where we live, and also the McFarland local exchange, 838. So the number starts 608-838, and you think somebody from our town is trying to get hold of you, and of course it's not. So the question I have is, I've never heard of any effort made to try to discourage these disguised phone numbers. Obviously, it'd have to be a national or even an international effort. Have you heard of anything?
Thanks for calling. Michelle, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah. So, Lyman, there have been a number of different efforts on the national level to stop these calls. One thing that happened is, I believe, December of 2019 now, was the TRACED Act. And it was federal legislation that went into place as it relates to authenticating phone numbers. So, you know, the source of the number is owned by someone and legitimate, and telephone providers and carriers are responsible for doing this authentication protocol to check to reduce robocalls, as well as there is also efforts at the federal level to try and identify who's making these calls and crack down on them. And we're part of those efforts in that when consumers file complaints and report the information that appears on the caller ID, even though we do know that it is spoofed, which is what you're talking about, that misrepresentation on the caller ID, we report all that to our federal partners, the Federal Trade Commission and the Federal Communications Commission, who work to investigate these matters and stop that. And we do see those efforts result in different prosecutions over time, but it takes a significant amount of time.
Yeah, I would think it would. Lyman, thank you so much. I want to go back to the stimulus for a minute. Dennis emailed to ask if the economic stimulus payment received in 2020 is considered as income. Does it get listed as income on the 2020 income tax form? And I'm not sure. Lara, do you know?
I am not sure I have the answer to that question. I do think it gets listed as income, but I'm not sure whether you get taxed on it. But my guess is that it's you can go to IRS EIP webpage. And again, that's IRS EIP webpage, and that should tell you, answer that question for you.
Yeah, I'm sure that's one of the most commonly asked questions on that page, probably. So good point, Lara. Well, let's go back to the scam reports. You listed number one. Who's second on the list of those reports, Michelle?
Yeah, so number two is really a technology support scam that we've talked about, and it's Apple calling consumers. And again, it's the fake Apple, an imposter, who is certainly trying to get consumers to engage with them because they indicate that your iCloud account has been compromised and that you need to take action right away. This has been a pretty aggressive tech support scam as well in the robocall aspect. They are pretty relentless and continue to call, especially if you've actually engaged with the call, hit any numbers. We've heard from consumers that they'll receive, 10 to 12 calls within an hour after they hang up, this just repeated phone calling. And this is one we received at our house here. So I can speak from experience that it is pretty aggressive in its constant calling. So again, we just want to remind consumers that Microsoft, Apple, they don't call your home and let you know that there's a problem. They do big announcements on TV, or through media to let you know that there's an issue to update your operating software or something, but they're not going to individually call you to let you know that there's a problem with your account. That's not how they function.
All right. Our guests today, Michelle Reinen and Lara Sutherland from the Division of Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. Join in with your own questions or comments or maybe experiences to share, bad or good, I guess, at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Sheila Sigley and Tyler Ditter, our engineers, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. With our two guests, Michelle Reinen and Lara Sutherland, about all kinds of consumer protection issues today. We've visited a bit about stimulus payments. We're talking about the top scams reported from the last month, and of course, taking your questions and comments as well, or your experiences, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. And what is next on our top scam report list here? Lara, do you want to go next?
I do. So we still are getting calls about this Apple tech support scam. This one is pretty relentless, too, because once someone gets a call and engages, they tend to get, 30-some-odd calls a day. So what happens is a tech support call comes from someone that you're not expecting. And so there again, if you've got an Apple or if you don't have an Apple, sometimes people get a call and they don't even have any Apple computers. So they get this call. And they're told that their ID, their Apple ID has been compromised, or that there's some tech help that needs to happen. Apple is not calling you unsolicited, so just hang up straight away. But don't press any buttons. It's one of the scams that ask you to press a button if you want to be removed from the list. That ultimately results in more calls coming, and you get more reports, as I said, up to 30 a day. So lots of calls related to this scam. Don't answer.
And Michelle, do you want to take the next one on the list?
Yeah, so Social Security Administration is certainly calling consumers again, and they are not. This, again, is a government imposter scam where we have heard from consumers that receive calls with scammers trying to impersonate the Social Security Administration, saying that their number needs to be verified or it will be inactive or because it's been compromised or used in some form of criminal activity. Usually they indicate something at the border. We've heard from consumers that the words COVID are thrown in just to add a current events twist to things as well. But this, again, has been going on for a while now as with different forms. But the Social Security Administration is not making unsolicited random phone calls to consumers. And we do need to note that if you call them, you know, because you have an issue or a problem, they will return your phone call. But again, you would be expecting to hear from them, and they're not going to ask you to do verification in order to proceed with your question. So another government imposter scam.
Let's take another call. Deb in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Deb. Thanks for calling.
Email stating that I was, my PayPal account was having fraudulent activity, and I needed to contact them. I did not do it. I just deleted them. Is this something that I should report, or how do I go about making? I don't care. I mean, I don't use my PayPal account, so.
Yeah. Michelle, Laura, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. So I would go ahead and contact PayPal to make sure that it hasn't been jeopardized. You're smart to ignore an unsolicited email if you aren't actually using the account. There, it very well could be a phishing attempt, and you're smart to be speculative about it. Although email, a way in which we're communicated with by the cards that we and the apps that we use. So I wouldn't ignore it altogether. What I would do is use a trusted source of connecting with PayPal that you know is valid and contact them and make sure that there's nothing going on with your account before I ignore it altogether.
Okay, there we go. Thank you very much for that question. Jim in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Okay. We got one of those computer boards. I don't know what you call them. I like an iPad, but it's about a foot square board screen, and you play games on it, and you move your fingers on it, touch stuff. And when you play this game, in order to increase your skill set or the next level, you have to pay to go up. So what happened on this game is it ended up charging us like $1,800 on our credit card. Obviously I'm upset about it, and I don't know, is there anything I can do about that?
Michelle?
Well, yeah, what you might want to look at, Jim, is, you know, certainly contact your credit card company to see if they're willing to engage in any negotiation. What they're going to look at is what were these different levels disclosed to you about the charge, and did you consent and agree to them? The Federal Trade Commission has looked at different gaming apps over time when there aren't disclosures or if they're entirely focused to children and that they're doing that authorization. Now, one thing you want to look at with your device is some devices allow for you to turn off in-app purchases, that it's not the application itself that has to make sure you're getting the authorization. Your device and connecting to your credit card, you know, through your device aspect will give you a second notification and that you have to trigger and say, yes, I want to purchase this in my app. So you want to look at the settings within your device to kind of stop that. But if you were authorizing it within the app, you know, that could be kind of a lost cause there, but certainly, you know, contact the app and see if there's any room for negotiation and reducing those charges for you.
Okay. Well, the other reason I'm calling is a warning to other people that you get these little pads, and we're older. We don't understand some of the – we're not up to date with the new things that are happening. We had no idea this was going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's a great message for everyone and a good reminder.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it very much. I was thinking about when you mentioned contact your credit card company, I had a situation where I was being charged for something on some sort of monthly payment that I never set up. And I contacted the credit card company, and the credit card company took it over, and I quickly got it. It wasn't long, and they had taken the money off my bill, and it wasn't long before I got a text message from the people who did it saying that they had removed me from the monthly report. So the credit card companies, in mine anyway, has been really good in following up on things. So just a little personal experience there. Let's go to Richard in Holman. Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I received a double stimulus check the first time around for myself and my deceased wife. I'm sure they're going to want their money back. I did not receive a second stimulus check. What's going to happen? Any ideas?
Yeah, Laura?
Well, it's a good question. I read many accounts of that happening, of economic impact payments being made to individuals who have already passed away. And I'm sorry about your wife. I would suggest calling this 1-800 number, 1-800-240-8100, or going to the IRS EIP website to look into that. If you were eligible for the first one, you should be getting a second one, and perhaps because you, and they're different amounts, so perhaps because your wife, there were two sent to you, they're maybe doing some kind of, I don't know, not sending you a second one. It's hard to say. But I would call that 1-800 number and explain the predicament to them and ask them what, if anything, you should be doing. And again, that is 800-240-8100.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, Richard, for calling. Vicki in Mount Horeb, it's your turn. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. Speaker here. My question is, when a password gets compromised, and that will happen every once in a while, instead of going in and just changing it, there are some accounts that I just would like to get rid of. But trying to get your account deleted from companies seems to be nearly impossible. It says to go to the company's website, and I've done that with two or three different ones, and you try to contact them and there's no phone or is there an easy way to actually delete the account and not just change the password again?
That is the $1 million question, Michelle. And there ain't no easy way, I don't think. But
what Boy, about Larry, it? you just said it correctly. There isn't an easy way. You know, some are going to be easier than others, as you explained, Vicki. Reaching out to the company, putting your request in writing to them is going to be important. I think the step I would take personally is, if if you are being unsuccessful in getting that account deleted, I would strip the account of any information that you are able to about yourself. So they may have it in the back end, you know, in their system and database, but as far as what you then have and available and could potentially be compromised in the future, if someone got a hold of your password and went in, it would be pretty stripped of information. No credit card, if that's what's storing there, if you can get rid of shipping addresses and any information about yourself. That's how I would handle that. But again, follow through in writing. See if their website under their privacy policy has a mechanism, a procedure for requesting that that account be stripped. Legislation across the country in different states is changing as it relates to data. So everyone, depending upon where companies are and where they interact, is at a little bit different place. So there may be that procedure out there for you to control that data. And you can always file a complaint with Consumer Protection if you're not getting a response from the company. We can always at least try and mediate and see if we can get a response on what their statement is as it relates to deleting accounts, would be an effort that we could try.
And what's your number and so forth?
Yeah, good ask, Larry. So you could go to our website to file that complaint at datcp.wi.gov, or you could call our consumer protection hotline at DADCAP, and that's 1-800-422-7128.
All right, there we go. Well, Nancy in Milwaukee is looking for a phone number to reach the IRS. She didn't receive her check, didn't get a card or direct deposit. She doesn't have the internet. The number you gave before is automated and asks for a card number. Is there any other number or way? She doesn't have the internet.
Yeah, what I would suggest is call our consumer protection hotline to see if they can assist you. Laura and I don't have that at our fingertips because the number we've been giving is if you've destroyed or lost your card. So it's funny, they do ask for a number because if you've destroyed or shredded it or lost it, that's, you know, kind of hard to produce. But I'd call our hotline and see if they can help locate a number for you.
And that's 1-800-422-7128.
1-800-422-7128.
All right. Let's take another call. By the way, you can join in too. We have open lines to get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Carol in De Pere, it's your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Good morning or good afternoon. I kind of lost track of my day here. So I have a question about emails that we receive and unsolicited ones and that we are trying to, that we'd like to be able to unsubscribe from them. And when we select, when you hit the unsubscribe button, then it takes you to another screen that asks you then to put in your email address. So is that in fact necessary? Right? So I feel like if I put in my email address, then that's just another way for somebody else to pass it on. And I'm just concerned about doing that.
Okay, Michelle.
So here, what I'm concerned with is it an email that you've received from a company you've actually done business with and have an account and have signed up? Because maybe you purchased something, put in your email and didn't realize there was a button to click to not get future solicitations or something. If you have an existing relationship and you are sure that that email is coming from that company, then you could provide that information because they're directing you to their subscriber list and how that works. Often it's preloaded and you can control, I want less ads, I want them weekly, or I want nothing, completely unsubscribe me. That I'm more comfortable with. But if it's an email that you don't know how you started receiving it because someone purchased a list and got your information, I just set rules to junk those and don't deal with them. don't click the links, don't give them anything more. Just I see them in my box, delete them type situation, because I don't want to follow through. And if it's really something that I'm not familiar with, have never seen before, I don't click anything at all, because I don't know if it could load malware, if it's a phishing attempt or an attack that way. So there's kind of different layers of analyzing those and how you might want to handle them.
Mm-hmm. Laura, something to add there?
Well, I wondered, I just spent some time finding the right phone number at the IRS. Can I give that now?
You can get that now.
Yes. Yeah, so for COVID-related assistance on the economic impact payment questions, the number is 1-800-919-9835. That's 1-800-919-9835. And I felt like I should give it now because it took me that whole time to find it, Larry. So I thought it'd be helpful for folks.
Yeah. So Nancy in Milwaukee, who had that question, and others, it's 800-919-9835. So we've got that set. Let's take another call. Jackie in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I'm calling. I got help from this from my husband, but when I get an email that, you know, I'm not sure is a scam or not, whether it's from Apple or PayPal or Amazon, he taught me to go to the top where it tells you who it's from. It says from. If you touch that, a little arrow will show up. And if you touch that little arrow, you'll get more information and you will see who it is actually from. You may think that you're talking, you know, that you should be talking to PayPal. And in fact, you see a name like Peggy Jones. And that is your knowledge now that you're being scammed. Because if it's actually from PayPal, it will say PayPal.
Yeah, that's
so
very good.
So that's one way
advice
to verify whether you're getting scammed or not. Because some of us have accounts, and we don't know if what we're getting is actually a scam or not.
It's a good point. It just hover over that address, and the arrow comes up, and click the arrow, and you're going to find out who is actually sending. And maybe it is PayPal, but maybe it's Peggy Sue or somebody. There you go. Thank you so much, Jackie. That's very good advice. Well, Mike in Algoma, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but I don't use my phone much. When I do, though, if I make a call out, oftentimes within 10 to 15 minutes, I'll get a robocall back. Have you heard anything like that happening?
So if you're sending, say you're phoning a friend or something and you hang up and then 10 minutes later you're getting a robocall.
Yeah, there's a good chance that in 10 minutes from now, I'll end up with a robocall.
Okay. Wow. I haven't heard that one, Laura.
No, that's very unusual. It may be worth calling your carrier. I mean, if you really are noticing this connection between your outgoing and incoming calls, then that would be something your carrier could track. It. That's not something we've ever heard of happening. Maybe are you in the witness protection program? Maybe it's a...
Well, I think that's really good advice to call a carrier. That's what I do as well. Mike, thank you for calling. Good luck. And Teresa in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. I was calling about the people who have been getting the phishing emails from supposedly from PayPal, that there is an email address that you can forward those to and PayPal will check them out. It's spoof, S-P-O-O-F, at paypal.com.
Spoof at paypal.com. All right. More good information. Thank you so much for that comment. Glenda emailed that she got a phone call stating she will be charged $200 for COVID vaccine unless they call and cancel. Wow. Laura?
Yes, so I'm sure she knows that's a scam, but it's a good segue into talking about that, Larry. We are concerned about the amount of misinformation and scams that could happen in the vaccine rollout. One of the challenges for the government is that there are a lot of different ways, and this is being rolled out different ways around the country, different ways, in fact, in some instances from county to county. And that really leads itself to a lot of information and confusion sometimes where scammers are able to move in and take advantage. So no, don't pay for a vaccine. No, don't pay to be on the list to get a vaccine. It is entirely free. And any information you need about the vaccine rollout in the state of Wisconsin can be found at the Department of Health Services website. And so go to trusted information about the vaccine rollout. Don't accept any information from unsolicited calls or texts, and by no means pay for it because it's free.
Bob emailed that his daughter received a request for funds from Venmo. The name used was a family member with whom she was had transacted with in the past. She agreed to the $200 request, but grew suspicious when they came right back and asked for more money. It was someone or somehow assumed the family member had assumed the family member's name and was clearly fraudulent. She immediately contacted Venmo and her bank, but the withdrawal went through. Anything else she can do to recoup her money? That's a hard one, Michelle.
That is a hard one. You know, I would at minimum put a complaint on file with Consumer Protection, and we'll make sure it gets to the Federal Trade Commission as well. What we've seen in the past with different companies that transfer money as a result but are maybe in a position to recognize scams is that if they don't have built up departments to question certain transactions or recognize things, they've had settlements with the Federal Trade Commission. And we're talking MoneyGram and Western Union. Now, Venmo, I don't know if this has happened to others, if this is any kind of practice. I'm not stating anything like that, but it's a good reminder for people to really check and question emails that you get if you've been part of something and someone has a request for money, pick up the phone and call that someone and say, are you in need of $200 before you would proceed with anything? And make sure that you then initiate and activate that transaction instead of just using something that was randomly sent to you. But I think that the one thing to make sure it's on our radars is to file that complaint. We may have success, we may not, but at least we'll start to see if a pattern occurs.
And that's to call. It's 800-422-7128 or go online to datcp.wi.gov. And a good thing to do for sure. Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, our guests today from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Join in with your questions. We've got open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at consumer scam issues on the show today with Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Division of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Great to have them with us. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Brian emailed that he and his wife both received claim notices from the Department of Workforce Development saying they'd filed for unemployment, but they had not. Is someone trying to claim unemployment benefits in their names, they're wondering. Laura?
So yes, that is a possibility, and you should report that immediately. There are a lot of fraudulent attempts nationwide on these unemployment insurance, and not in Wisconsin is no different. The Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection is working with the Department of Workforce Development to address these claims and this fraud. So there are concerns about identity theft and someone claiming an unemployment check on your behalf. So please contact our office and file a complaint. And again, that's datcp.wi.gov.
All right, there we go. Jane in Portage, it's your turn now. Hi, Jane.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A lot of ladies especially get hit up on these social media sites like Facebook and whatnot for friend requests, and then eventually they talk into, oh, well, I'm an oil worker or I'm in the military and I have this financial restriction that's preventing me from getting something done. And it turns out that it's a fake profile. And if you left click on the profile picture, you'll get a drop down menu if you're using Google, and you'll get Google search, and you can actually search that picture. And I've done that many times before when I've gotten friend requests and found out that the name, the picture is associated with three or four different profiles with different names.
Michelle?
Well, I just love that Jane called with this today. It's almost like we asked her to call and we did not. But one thing we wanted to talk about is romance scams. And one way that those can happen is through these social media friend requests that happen, or if individuals go out and are using some other form of online dating application. And you are just, you know, looking to find a bond, a friendship, maybe a romance that will lead down the road to something more. But what we see is that individuals, scammers, will set up these fake profiles, as Jane mentioned, and try and get the emotions involved into the consumer, chat several times a day, build that trust and that relationship, and then something happens, some trigger. Maybe they are in that foreign country. Maybe they are having a business venture that has gone wrong. Maybe there's a medical emergency or some law emergency as well, some other kind of legal problem that you have. We've even seen now that some are claiming, you know, COVID issues. And then all of them are going to need a financial solution in some form or another. So they either ask for assistance, or because this emotional relationship has begun, the offering of money comes up. And then what will happen is you'll make the payment. The relationship will continue. Another problem will occur. Another problem will occur. We've seen from Federal Trade Commission statistics that some consumers get roped into like three attempts at, a financial. They'll just continue until the consumer stops. But there were over 200 million losses in 2019 to different romance scams. So we ask consumers to just, ask questions repeatedly in different forms to look for really consistent answers. That reverse image search that Jane described perfectly should also be done to see if there are different profiles out there using that same photo and image. Take things very slow and involve friends and family in this newfound relationship as well. Don't hide it from them. Involve them, but don't get upset if they ask questions. You know, they're just there to make sure that you're protected from this person you haven't really met yet, even though it seems like it, and want to make sure that you stay safe and don't get caught up in a scam.
I'm always surprised that just on Facebook, the number of friend requests I get from what looks to be young women of their 20s and so forth, and I have no idea who they are, and so I just delete the request and let it go at that. And that's probably a good idea for if you're on Facebook like I am sometimes, to just delete. Well, Jane in Portage. Did we do Jane in Portage?
That, yeah, I think that was just Jane with the Roman.
Yeah,
the,
that was
the
Jane.
Great...
That's right. Let's go to Pam in Escanaba, Michigan. Hi, Pam. Pam, are you there? We're not hearing from Pam. Let's take another email. Mark emailed that he got a new cell phone for his blind 96-year-old mother-in-law who is living in an assisted living facility. And within 1 week, she started getting vehicle warranty calls. Her number is listed on the do not call list. Is anyone actively trying to get these scammers? And is there anything we can do to protect her from these scammers? Oh, boy. You just got a brand new cell phone. And right away, Laura.
I know. Trying to be helpful. And then she gets all these calls. So a couple things. This was the top five complaint call we had in January. We're getting lots of complaints about extended warranty telemarketing and also extended warranty letters. There are, you know, companies out there trying to sell extended warranty. So my suggestion is to file a complaint. Sometimes they're scams and sometimes they're companies that are violating the no call list. So a quick bit about that. If it's a company that's just trying to steal your money, and it's a scam call, they're not going to register for the no call list. They're just trying to get your money or your personal identifying information. So being on the no call list doesn't help you. If it's a company that really wants to sell you an extended warranty, they need to be complying with the law. And if you are on the no call list, they shouldn't be calling. So that's why I say you should file a complaint, because perhaps it's not a scam call. It's somebody who's trying to sell you an extended warranty, and we can follow up with an investigation for the violation of the no call list. But yeah, a lot of these are actually just scams. So you should block the number. You can also contact your carrier, your mother-in-law's carrier, because as we said earlier in the show, there was a federal act passed in 2019 that does put the burden on these carriers to authenticate incoming calls. You know, it is not foolproof, as we know, but they do have an obligation to try, and you can contact them and tell them that your mother-in-law is having a significant number of calls get through to her cell phone.
All right, let's go to Dee in McFarland now. Dee, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
So I have a question about the security of, you know, small businesses. A lot of people are now using the Square payments, you know, based on the, you know, using the web as a payment system. And a few weeks ago, I received an email from Square saying that, unbeknownst to me, a $2,000 payment had been approved. Called my bank, called Square, got it all straightened away. But I'm just wondering exactly how secure are these, you know, these just really small credit card readers, and are there firewalls, are there security systems? Would like to know about that.
Michelle?
So that's a pretty difficult question, I think, for us to answer, because we don't analyze the individual products themselves to know that. A Consumer Reports magazine or a tech magazine may have the answer to that question, because they do those kind of industry analyses. But what I can say is that these small businesses, you know, would want to look at the privacy policies and settings that go with the company that they want to use, or whatever mechanism they want to use in order to accept these electronic payments. And the other part of that is going to be, what is their own security system when they're transmitting the data? Over what type of system? How's their operating system up to date? What's their firewall protection and their secure connection to the internet. So it's not just about the company, it's going to be about the transmission of information in that login system and their own internal system as well. It's multi-layered, very complicated. So this is why, as consumer protection, I think we really go to encouraging consumers that when they are doing these types of electronic purchases, to use a credit card as often as you can because of the federal protections that center around credit card charges and authorization aspects. So you have a mechanism to dispute those should they not happen or some compromise occur, versus just giving a bank information and doing a direct wire type situation.
Yeah, that makes a very, very good sense. Well, Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Laura Sutherland is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. They will be with us right up until 12:30 today. And, of course, we'll take your calls and questions. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Michelle and Laura. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Laura Sutherland, Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen, Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection within our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. Advice on how to handle a consumer problem? You come to the right place. Give a call, 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. Still getting quite a few stimulus questions, and it's probably worth repeating the information, Laura, that you gave earlier on the stimulus checks. And I wanted to add one thing. Willie had an email about the missing spring stimulus checks. Just to get that out of the way, they were in that position, Willie was, and IRS now says the best way to deal with that earlier one is to fill in the proper line on the upcoming federal tax form. So that's how to deal with that earlier one. But Laura, what about the other one?
So, right. So there's a second round of stimulus checks coming, and I think there's confusion because they're coming in sometimes in different forms. So if you got it, most folks should have gotten it directly deposited by early January. If you didn't, you might be getting a paper check or a debit card. And then the debit card, I think, is always concerning, whether you get an unsolicited card from something that purports to be the government. In this instance, it's not a scam. And here's how you know whether or not that card that came in the mail is not a scam. First of all, it comes in a white envelope with a return address of Money Network Cardholder Services, and it will have the seal of the U.S. Department of Treasury on it. Another way you can tell it's not a scam, it has the Visa name on the front of the card, and the issuing bank is MetaBank. And that's located in Omaha, Nebraska. So those are ways you can tell whether you've gotten a card that's legitimate. You can look for information about how to use that card at eipcard.com. That'll tell you when fees are charged and when they're not. And then if you accidentally destroyed the card or you threw it out thinking it was a scam, you can call 1-800-240-8100 for a replacement. Now, we did get a call earlier saying you had to have the card number. So if you destroyed it, I'm not sure how that works. So let me give you another number and apologize for all this information. The other number to the IRS about these cards is 1-800-919-9835. Now, and the last thing I'll say is, if you didn't get all that information, you can go to our website. We have FAQs with links to the websites at the IRS with the phone numbers that you need and some basic information about these stimulus cards.
Yeah, that's datcp.wi.gov. And just a reminder that not everybody's getting the stimulus this time. You may be in an income situation. I forget what the income levels are, but if you're making a pretty good income, you're not going to get a stimulus, or you wouldn't have received a stimulus. You could still go online and check to make sure. They will tell you if you didn't qualify for the stimulus.
That's right. The eligibility requirements are on that website too, Larry. So good point. That's absolutely correct.
Anne in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Anne.
Hello. We have gotten a couple calls. I don't know if it's from Medicare, but it's about Medicare or about cancer screening tests. And the person says that one needs to get these tests. Otherwise, if one gets cancer, it may not be covered by Medicare. It just seems like a really weird call.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a weird call and not a good one, Michelle, I don't think.
Yeah, it actually is a version of one that I think we heard about a couple of years ago where they were indicating that you needed to take a different test in order to make sure things were covered. And again, you are absolutely right. The only one who's going to require tests or ask you to participate in things would be your physician when you are at a doctor's appointment and checking things out. So they're not going to just call you and indicate, boy, you better take this and get this on file, or in the future, this won't be covered. It's, again, not the process. It's not how things work. They are far too busy to make all sorts of random phone calls to individuals. So just disregard those. Do not provide your information, because that's likely all that they are seeking. And you should just ignore the call and try not to engage in it at all.
Thank you, Ann. Let's go to Carol in Janesville. Hi, Carol.
Hello. For years and years, I wondered what the scoop is on Publisher Clearinghouse. You know, see that on TV and people coming to the door and, oh, they win $5,000 a month forever. What is this all about? And, of course, I have a mailing, too. It's been around since I can remember.
Yeah, and it's one of the top scam reports from last month, isn't it, Michelle?
It is. It's a very popular thing because we do see it all over TV and wonder, and wouldn't we all like to win $5,000 a week for the remainder of our lives and be able to give it to whomever we designate? I've seen the commercial a few times, you can tell. So certainly there is a legitimate Publisher's Clearinghouse. And from what we know and I've seen, you know, they're trying to sell magazine subscriptions and different things along the way. But the one that's calling you and enticing you to do things is an imposter scam, because it is a well-publicized big prize winning, and everyone again would like to have that windfall. So they're trying to collect emails from you. They certainly solicit you by email and phone calls and trying to tell you that you've won. We've heard that they had a big calling where people were winning the Cadillac. All you needed to do was pay the registration fee, the taxes on it, and then some delivery, and then it would show up in your driveway. But if you've won, you wouldn't have to pay all those things. And in addition, you would have entered the contest, of which you've now won a prize. They're not just going to pick a person at random. So just disregard the phone call or the email if you get that. And if you know, you could go to a legitimate Publishers Clearinghouse website if you were ever interested in the legitimate, but you want to read all those contests and promotions and really know what you'd be obligated to if you enter that legitimate contest.
There you go, Carol. Kimberly in Fox Lake, hello.
Hi. So like many people in my age group, I have student loans I'm paying, and I know that I don't qualify for the loan forgiveness, but I know that on January 31st, the government hold on the student loans went up. As soon as it hit February 1st, I've been getting 3 to 4 calls a day for student loan forgiveness, and they've even been leaving voicemails. And I was wondering, is there anything I can do to combat this, report it, whatnot? Because it's different numbers. It's sometimes in my area code, different states, everything.
Okay, Lara.
So I'm sorry about that. First of all, super frustrating. So just to be clear, the federal government's student loan forbearance has been extended till September 30th, 2021. So loans, federal loans that are eligible for this forbearance will automatically get put into forbearance until September 2021, and that's retroactive to March 2020. They will not accrue interest during this period. So on those loans, if you can keep paying, that's great because it's going to principal. So you don't have to pay, but you, if you can keep paying, I recommend you keep paying because you're actually really chipping away at those loans. The other thing you should know is there are some federal loans that don't go into forbearance. And we're not going to get into the weeds here, but what that means is you really need to pay attention what loans you still need to be paying on. And the good news is there's a free hotline in Wisconsin. I'm going to give you another number, 833-589-0750, 833-589-0750. It can walk you through which loans are eligible and which ones aren't. There are also some private loans that are giving some level of forbearance or forgiveness during this period. So look into that as well. So that's the forbearance structure. In terms of the relentless phone calls that you're getting about your student loans, absolutely ignore those. And you can call the department if you'd like to file a complaint about them. If you think there perhaps is a, you know, if you're on a no call list and you shouldn't be getting calls, that's one issue. And then many of them are scams. There are a lot of debt settlement companies out there that try to separate students from their money, promising that they can get you quicker loan forgiveness, or they can really limit your payments for loans. And oftentimes it's, they are charging you for something you can get for free from the Department of Education. And they are also putting you in a program that perhaps you shouldn't be in that will often cost you more money in the long run. So ignore those calls. They could be scams or they could be problematic. And again, call that 800 number that I gave, 833-589-0754, to figure out which loans you should be paying on and some ideas about ways in which you can pay your loans back legitimately.
Let's take another call. Pam in Escanaba, your turn. Hi, Pam.
Hi, Larry. Can you hear me this time?
Can indeed.
All right. Wonderful. I'm calling about a call my mother got last week, which apparently is one of those grandparent scams. And she's 82, and I had a really hard time convincing her that the person who called her was not my son. And it got to the point where she wouldn't believe me. He had to call her. They had convinced her. They had been so convincing to her. So she did not give them money, but I did get a number or a name of the lawyer that supposedly she was supposed to call. And I actually looked up his actual number, called him. He said he's been battling this for a year and a half. And he gave me a number of a detective. I called the detective, and the detective told me he's been doing work, and almost people have been scammed out of almost $300,000 just in this one scam alone, using this one lawyer's name as the person that the people have to call. So I told my mom going forward, like, we'll have a safe word. And if somebody calls her again, then, you know, the supposed grandchild needs to tell her what the safe word is. Is there anything else you can think of that people can do to protect themselves against this?
I think one thing that you can do as a family unit is to just have a conversation about what information is posted on social media, because these scammers do try and trick the grandparent based on the information that they can find online about the family. So that is one way. Having a safe word is an excellent thing. We also encourage those who get caught up in it to ask a question only that individual is going to know, like, what is it that I gave you for your first birthday, you know, and present, you know, type situation. And that's almost like that safe word, that magic question that only that individual is going to know the answer to, because it hasn't been posted anywhere else, no photo of it, nothing. The third thing I would suggest, since she had a difficult time believing you, you know, that, and that your son had to call her to assure her that he was safe, is to try and get a copy of our senior guide. You can call our consumer protection hotline and have a hard copy sent to you, but it summarizes a number of these different scams that target seniors to try and lend credibility to what you are saying, that this is a scam. And it outlines them, the scams for individuals. So maybe having that would also be a tool and a visual reminder for your mom to just hang up on these things and that they're not legitimate. So you can go to our consumer protection hotline to have the senior guide sent out to you. And that is 1-800-422-7128, or go to our webpage and you can download an electronic copy at datcp.wi.gov.
All right, there we go. Pam, thank you so much. Sort of another phone related kind of thing here. Laura emailed in regard to the gentleman whose mother-in-law received unwanted calls on her new smartphone. And Laura says they can protect her from unwanted calls by setting her phone to answer only calls from phone numbers of people she knows in her contact list or people she has called herself. And there's a setting that I think that, Michelle, that can be done.
Yeah, depending upon which type of phone that she got, you know, sometimes there's some real basic phones that you can get that may not have that technology available in it. But otherwise, if you can set that up in the privacy settings aspect, that is a really great tool if that person will only be using the phone to talk to friends and family, and you can get them all programmed in there.
And another Laura, this one in Menominee Falls, emailed to remind us that many credit cards will provide you with your credit report on a monthly basis. That goes back to the credit reports, and I get that credit report on a monthly basis, or I get at least a number, what my credit number is, which is thankfully pretty good. But does that give you all the detail? I've never really gone in and looked for details, and I'm not sure if that's the case, Michelle or Laura.
The monthly one is that credit score usually and some information. The annual credit report that you can get that's free gives you that full report. It's not about your score. It's about where you've lived now and in the past, what mortgages and loans you've had, what credit cards you've had, what utility bills, you know, are out there, all extensions of credit. It's that full history. And you want to make sure that's completely accurate. And when you're monitoring it, that nothing new is popping that shouldn't be there as well. So, but that one won't give you a score because it's not about that.
Yeah. Sam emailed that he can confirm that there are spam calls after using the phone to make a phone call. He uses his phone every day for business, and shortly after making his first call, he will receive spam and other ghost calls. no voicemails because he doesn't answer, but it happens every day in capitals letters. He's talked with his cell provider, and once again, they have provided no help other than don't answer the phone. Michelle in Fort Atkinson emailed to have exactly the same experience with her provider. So that's not good news. But yeah, Michelle, you were going to comment.
I wonder, depending upon the types of devices, these are probably smartphones, if putting a call blocking app, you know, using one of those apps that are out there would help assist and minimize some of these. I know, Larry, you've talked about an app that you've used in the past, and I just wonder if that wouldn't help somewhat in minimizing these calls for these people.
Yeah. A listener emailed that they thought that a law passed ban internet providers from charging a monthly rental fee for equipment like the router. Can they charge the name of the, can they change the name of the charge and say they're calling it a monthly payment and somebody will own the router? That doesn't make sense because of the router doesn't work unless you buy the service from them. So that's a little confusing, the email itself, but it has to do with routers and monthly charges for sure, and a rental fee for equipment like the router.
Yeah, all information needs to be disclosed at the time you enter a subscription and what your rate and fees are going to be, and then they need to notify you of increases within a particular amount of time before that increase happens. So I think if there's a question as to what's being charged versus what was disclosed, filing a complaint with Consumer Protection would be a useful thing so we can take a look at that and make sure that things are as they should be.
Right, because rental agreements are also covered by the Consumer Act and Department of Financial Institutions. So there may be some disclosures if they've converted it into some sort of credit transaction, that would also be an issue. So please do file a complaint so we can take a look and see what's going on there.
Yeah, but all good. And the tax identity theft in the last minute, I think it's worth talking about that, Michelle. Yeah, Michelle, do you want?
Yeah, and so certainly we want to mention that tax identity theft is a real thing and consumers need to be sure that they are protecting their information from the identity thieves, which means you file early and you file first before identity thieves can use your information to do the filing. And we also want to be sure that you are doing it in a secure manner because that can trip things up. Meaning that if you are preparing them yourselves and electronically filing, you're doing it using all those precautions we've talked about by having a secure system. When we go through all those issues during Cybersecurity Month in October. But then if you're having a preparer do your taxes, really understand what it is you're authorizing and ask how they're protecting your information. If you're just asking them to prepare, don't authorize transmission. And there's lots of resources out there for consumers. So visit irs.gov or Wisconsin 211 if you have questions.
Michelle and Laura, thank you both very much. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much. Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Division of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They'll be back, and we'll talk with them. They're back April 1st, as a matter of fact. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, orchids and other tropical plants in the discussion. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.